The day began with laughter and the promise of escapism, a respite from the heavy burden of my studies in criminal psychology. The sun was relentless in Florida, a glaring sign of relaxation over the water park that promised to wash away the academic frustrations with its cool, inviting waves. My friends and I, all of us desperate for a break, had chosen this place to unwind, to momentarily forget the burdens of our future careers.
I can't believe you're finally taking a day off, Charlie.
Jenna teased as we approached the towering slides, each one bigger than the other, their spirals like serpents basking in the sun. I know, right? I might even forget how to analyze a crime scene if I'm not careful. I replied, the irony of my words soon to unfold in ways I couldn't have imagined. What we witnessed that day at the water park, the panic, the bodies, the disaster, we weren't prepared for it. As the day wore on, laughter filled the air, mingling with the sounds of splashing water and distant music. It was a cacophony of joy, until it wasn't. The first incident seemed an accident, a tragic anomaly. A young man, his body rigid, sank beneath the water's surface without a struggle, as if embraced by the depths. It was surreal, watching him drown in a pool crowded with people, all of us initially unaware of the unfolding tragedy.
It's gotta be a prank,
Jenna muttered. I don't want to horrify her, but the moment they were pulling the person out, I knew he was gone. The arrival of the paramedics, their faces etched with urgency, shattered any illusion of hope that Jenna might have had. She screamed, like many others around, and hugged me as tears left her eyes.
We need to clear the pool!
One of the lifeguards shouted, his voice slicing through the confusion. I watched, a silent observer trained to notice the details others might overlook. It was then I saw him, a figure moving with a deliberate calmness amidst the chaos. He was an older man, his gaze fixed on the unfolding scene, a small, satisfied smile playing on his lips.
Did you see that?
I nudged Jenna, pointing subtly at the man.
Something's off about him.
She glanced in his direction, her brow furrowing.
We're out of school, Charlie. There's no criminals hunting in water parks. Let's just calm down.
Before I could answer, another scream pierced the air, drawing our attention to a second victim in a wave pool across. Like the first, this person showed no signs of struggle, simply succumbing to the water as if their body had betrayed them.
This isn't right,
I murmured, my mind racing. Accidents were not unheard of, but the lack of struggle, the complete surrender to the water, it hinted at something far more sinister. Determined to understand, I approached the man I had spotted earlier. He was now sitting alone, watching the chaos from a distance.
Excuse me, sir,
I began, my voice steady despite the pounding of my heart.
Did you see what happened?
He turned to me, his eyes cold, the smile gone.
Tragic, isn't it? People should be more careful.
His response was too casual, too detached.
Do you come here often?
I pressed, hoping to glean more about him.
Every now and then,
he replied, his tone academic, almost clinical. The conversation was cut short by the arrival of more emergency personnel, their focus on securing the area and attending to the victims. I watched as the man stood, blending into the crowd, disappearing before I could question him further.
Charlie, let's stick together,
Jenna said, her voice laced with anxiety.
This is getting too weird.
She was right. The festive atmosphere had soured, the laughter replaced by whispers of fear and confusion. Yet, amidst my fear, my curiosity, my need to understand the why and the how grew stronger. It was then I decided to follow my instincts, to delve deeper into the mystery that had turned a day of leisure into a nightmare. Little did I know, the truth I sought would lead to one of the darkest days in our recent times. As the day descended into chaos, with the park's once vibrant atmosphere now overshadowed by fear, my resolve to uncover the truth behind the sinister events only strengthened. The memory of the man's detached demeanor lingered in my mind, a puzzle demanding to be solved. My friends, sensing my determination, rallied around me, despite their own apprehensions.
We should really inform the authorities, Charlie. This could be dangerous.
Jenna insisted, her concern palpable.
I will, but first I need to understand what we're dealing with.
I replied, my decision firm. The knowledge I'd acquired in my criminal psychology course became a beacon, guiding my next steps. We divided our efforts, agreeing to discreetly observe and gather any information that could shed light on the situation. It wasn't long before I noticed a pattern as more people started drowning in other areas of the water park. Before each incident, the same man was always in the vicinity, his presence a constant among the variables. Armed with this realization, I approached the park security, relaying my observations and suspicions. The security team, already on high alert, promised to discreetly monitor the man while ensuring the safety of the remaining guests. As the security initiated their subtle surveillance, I couldn't shake off a feeling of being watched. Turning, I caught a fleeting glimpse of the man, his gaze now fixed on me, an ominous glint in his eyes. The hunter had become the hunted. The confrontation was inevitable, so I decided to confront him head on.
"Why are you doing this?"
I demanded, cornering him away from the crowd.
"Who are they?"
His response was chilling, a confession delivered with chilling calmness.
"I'm an architect of fear, Charlie. I create scenarios to observe human reactions to fear and paralysis. It's fascinating, don't you think?"
My blood ran cold at his words, but it was his next revelation that truly shook me to my core.
"Do you remember me, Charlie? I doubt it. But I remember you. Your father was my esteemed colleague, whose life's work I continued after his untimely death."
The connection snapped into place, a twisted lineage of study and madness. My father, a renowned neurologist, had died in a lab accident years ago, his research into paralytic agents lost with him, or so I had thought.
"You're his protege,"
I realized, the pieces of the puzzle aligning into a horrifying picture.
"Precisely. And today I prove that I completed his work. Plant-based paralytics, shared paranoia. You know, your father wouldn't have tried it on himself if your stupid mother wouldn't have alerted the administration. And now, when I should have been savoring my masterpiece with a glass of iced tea, you alerted security. I would have handed myself over once this was over, Charlie. But I needed you to be here. Your father was my idol, and you, his son, will be my masterpiece,"
he proclaimed, revealing a syringe hidden within his coat. The ensuing struggle was a blur, a desperate fight for survival. It was only through sheer luck and the timely intervention of park security that I managed to escape his grasp, the syringe shattering harmlessly on the ground. The man was apprehended, his reign of terror brought to an end, but the scars of that day remained etched into my memory. The water park, once a place of joy, had become a scene of nightmares, with 13 people dead. The final twist, a revelation that haunts me to this day, was the understanding that the line between genius and madness is perilously thin, and that sometimes the monsters we fear lurk not in the shadows, but among us. I remember the day as if it were yesterday, though it's been 20 years. My name is Ed, and I'm a psychologist. I've spent a considerable part of my career studying the impact of unresolved trauma on the human psyche. Perhaps my interest in this field was sparked by a personal tragedy, the loss of my best friend, Jamie, at a pool party I had thrown in my backyard 2 decades ago. It was ruled as an accidental drowning, but something about that day never sat right with me. The way the light danced mockingly on the water's surface as we all stood in disbelief, the hushed whispers that followed, and the faces of those present, 7 boys and girls, now men and women, who I suspected knew more about Jamie's death than they let on. On Jamie's 20th death anniversary, I received a text from a sister. She was going through his old stuff and found an image of us from 2 decades ago. My heart told me that there was something more to his death, and then when I received that picture, I got reminded of my best friend. He always shared his food, taught me how to skate, and got me into Dungeons & Dragons. He even taught me how to tie my shoelaces. The least I could do now after 20 years was to use my experience and get the truth, perhaps approach it like an experiment. So I staged a pool party, mirroring the one from our youth, and invited those 7 individuals under the guise of a nostalgic reunion. Each had moved on, or so it seemed, their faces etching a map of the years that had passed, yet within their eyes, I searched for traces of guilt. As the evening sun dipped below the horizon, casting long shadows around the pool that had been the scene of my greatest loss, I proposed a game of truth or dare. It was a fitting choice given our shared history. "Let's start with something light," I suggested. "Dare for Adam. Dive into the pool and swim 10 laps without stopping. See if he still doesn't sink with his belly." Adam, once the jock of our group, hesitated, only a moment before complying. His dive was less graceful than it used to be, but when he emerged from the water, shaking his head like a dog after just 3 laps, there was laughter. A tension broke, but it was only the beginning. I followed it up with some fun tasks, got out some gossip, and chose some dares, which we only did as kids. Along with these dares, I was also passing them more gin and tonics, and it didn't take the group much time to get loose. In between, I suddenly brought up that Jamie used to love throwing rocks at the crows which sat on the cables beside the pool, and the tone sombered down. This was an important play, a part of suggestive poking, as I call it. And the very next question I put to Lisa, the same question which I had asked her 2 decades ago, but she refused to answer. "Truth for Lisa, did you ever hide something important from someone at this very party 20 years ago?"
"Yes,"
she admitted after a pause.
I saw someone push Jamie, but I was scared. I didn't know what to do."
A collective gasp filled the air, and the atmosphere shifted palpably. I didn't want the awkwardness to linger, so I pulled out a few more fun questions to divert the attention on what Lisa had said. "Dare for Michael. Stand on the diving board and recount the day Jamie died. The whole truth." Michael, whose loyalty to Jamie had always been in question, climbed onto the board reluctantly.
I can't,"
he stammered, stepping down. The admission of his cowardice was damning in its own right. As the game moved on, the air grew thick with confessions and accusations started flying among the group. Yet, the confession I sought remained elusive, dangling just out of reach as the evening wore on. That is when people started leaving. As I cleaned up the remnants of the party, my mind raced with possibilities. Had I come any closer to the truth? Or had I merely reopened old wounds for nothing? Only time would tell. But one thing was certain. The game of truth or dare had set something irrevocable in motion. As a psychologist, I understood the power of guilt and the weight of secrets held for too long. It was the next day when the breakthrough came. Lisa reached out to me.
"Ed, we need to talk,"
she said, her voice trembling over the phone. The urgency in her tone was unmistakable, and we agreed to meet in a quiet cafe away from prying eyes. Sitting across from me, Lisa looked like a shadow of a girl I once knew.
"After the party, I couldn't stop thinking about what I said, about what I saw. It wasn't just someone pushing Jamie. It was Thomas."
The name hit me like a physical blow. Thomas, one of our closest friends, always the life of the party, always the one we thought would do great things. How had I not seen it? "Why didn't you say anything before?" I asked, my voice barely a whisper.
"I was scared. Thomas threatened me afterwards. I was just a kid, Ed. I didn't know what to do. And then as time went on, it just got harder to say something."
Her confession, while seemingly straightforward, painted a seed of doubt in my mind. As a psychologist, I'm trained to notice discrepancies in behavior and speech, and something about Lisa's narrative didn't align. Her body language betrayed her, the way she avoided eye contact and the slight tremble in her voice, not a fear, but perhaps guilt. I casually mentioned a fabricated piece of evidence, a tactic often used in therapy to encourage honesty. You know, Lisa, they are reopening his investigation. His sister found the strangest thing among Jamie's belongings recently, a locket inscribed with the initials L.S. I know you had been cheating on your boyfriend at the time with him. Curious, isn't it? It was as if the floodgates had opened. Lisa's composure crumbled, the weight of 2 decades of guilt proving too much to bear.
I didn't mean for it to happen.
She sobbed, her confession pouring out. It had been an argument while the others were inside to watch an episode of their favorite show. It escalated, making her push him in the pool. He was super drunk, so by the time she returned a few minutes later, he had drowned. The locket, a piece of evidence I had invented, has been nothing more than a psychological ploy, yet it had been the key to unlocking the truth. Lisa's immediate recognition of the item, which didn't actually exist, confirmed her involvement beyond a shadow of a doubt. It was a risky move, but one that paid off. No one remembers their belongings from 2 decades ago. With Lisa's confession, the case reopened a dramatic turn. The truth about that day, long obscured by time and silence, was finally brought to light. The community was shaken by the revelation, a poignant reminder of how easily the truth can be concealed, and how heavy the burden of guilt can become. As I sat in the courtroom watching the proceedings unfold, I couldn't help but reflect. It was a bittersweet victory, one that brought closure to Jamie's family, but at a significant cost. In the end, it wasn't just about solving a mystery or uncovering a secret. It was about seeking justice for a friend lost too soon.